traveling man, made a lot of stops all over the world, and in every port I owned the heart of at least one lovely girl.
Well, my goodness, it's the Eric Meehan story right there. It's a time for Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Hello, Eric.
Hey, you know, it's funny, Richard. Speaking of traveling, I wish I could stay on the line with you, but I just got signed by the Giants to back up the offensive line. Signing everybody off their couch these days. That's where I am. That's where they found me. So sorry, everybody, but I'm off to make my modest fortune getting pummeled by the rest of the NFL.
Just make sure you protect Tyrod Taylor.
I actually, it's funny every time, you know, the common man gets asked, you know, what could you do? Could you take like a hit from somebody? Could you score an NHL goal? And I'm like, I would cower like a baby and say, no mercy. I don't know why I'm here. I'm serious. I watched Derrick Henry run and I'm like, no. As Rich Eisen puts it, it's a business decision, and I would make the wrong decision. Or maybe the right decision.
Yeah, those big fellas hit hard.
Oh, gory. I just, you know what's, we're going to get to wine, folks, I swear to God, but the strain, every week somebody else is getting just hurt because their tendons, their ligaments, their whatever cannot take the sort of training that they're putting themselves through. It's they're turning themselves into machines, and the human body just isn't meant for it. And it's just so scary. You know, every week you just see injury, 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 and then of course you see some horrible injuries. So it's getting harder and harder. You know, I've got a son upstairs, just turned 11, wants to play football. I'm so relieved to see that the Olympics are bringing in flag football. I've talked to him about that. I've talked to other people. I'm like, you know, let's keep football, but at least at a younger age, make it safer, because my goodness, these guys get ripped up. And now, and not just guys, but ladies are playing as well. So anyway, let's talk wine. Let's talk things getting ripped up, but we're going to talk geography here.
Mm.
So we're moving north. We were in California, and we're moving north, and we're going to cover the Pacific Northwest today, because, as I said, we have sort of a compressed schedule, and I want to get to the increasingly important East Coast next week. But what I want to talk about is sort of, you know, to remind everybody what made the viticultural areas that we talk about when we talk about the Pacific Northwest, and that was this magnificent glacial lake. So the last ice age we had, about 13,000 years ago, produced a couple of ice sheets in basically what we know as, you know, the Vancouver area, basically over into Edmonton, etc. The Cordilleron was the one that was closest to the Pacific, and then the Laurentian, which is further inland. And this created, you know, ice dams, and it happened to create a 2,000-foot high ice dam, which created this magnificently large glacial lake called Lake Missoula. And depending on who you listen to, and there's many theories about this, but what's undeniable is that the dam burst at least once, if not upwards of 40-plus times, and it created just anybody who's ever sort of sat there and watched the tide come in and then go out and see little rivulets going out of sand, things like that. Anyone who's ever seen some massive erosion that happens, for instance, just recently here with some of the heavy rains. Anyone who's ever seen, gone to Iceland, you can see evidence of some of these unbelievable waterfall carve-outs. You can go to this area. So it's the initial area that it kind of came crashing over is now known as the Scab Land, and you can go there, and it literally does look like a beach after the water runs out, except on a massive scale. You can see the ripples in the landscape. You can see the carve-outs in the landscape. It is undeniable, and you can, as I say, see it on a micro level anywhere you go, but on a macro level, when you zoom out, and you can go to Google Earth right now and look at it, for goodness sake. And it ripped out all these chunks of land and brought them down through the Columbia Valley and then down into what we know as the Willamette Valley and the Rogue Valley and washed it all out to sea. And it left sediments, and it also left basically a water line. And you can sort of see that. And in fact, we'll talk briefly about both the Willamette and then the Columbia Valleys. But that's where the winemakers joke in the Willamette Valley, but that's where the soil ends, is the water line from those massive floods, because that's where all those wonderful little sediments that all that water brought down and made really excellent vineyard lands, that's where it stops, where the water line stopped, because of this massive flow of water. But if you ever look at it on a map, it's quite unbelievable to think the force of nature that granted us good Pinot Noir. So quickly about the Willamette Valley, I shouldn't say a lesser extent, but the Willamette Valley is more famous, but the Rogue River Valley as well, is Oregon, home to well over 700 wineries, several distinct American viticultural regions within it. As I mentioned, the Willamette, certainly the southern Oregon region. And then it also includes, Oregon does, parts of the Columbia Valley, the Snake River, and the Walla Walla Valley. Oregon was one of those places that was sort of thought too cold for traditional viticulture. The people who went in early were thought to be kind of nuts, but they planted what are traditionally cold weather grapes, your Pinot family, right? Your Pinot Noir is certainly the biggest grape from Oregon. Pinot Gris. Is absolutely fabulous. Pinot Grigio, Pinot Gris, same wine, same grape, rather. Chardonnay, quite nice. So basically all the things you see in Burgundy, in the southern part of England, in Champagne, in Alsace, these things grow wonderfully there. Just because it's classic. So the early adventurers there were kind of brilliant. It's also home to a lot of people who are kind of playing around, which is fun. You see, like, Tempranillo, Viognier, Gewürztraminer, even Zinfandel, Tannat, Cab. Just people are kind of playing around because there's still some land left. And it's, as I said, from those floods, there's a lot of good soil. So it's worth checking out. The other part of, obviously, the Pacific Northwest is Washington State. Now, again, if you're looking at an overhead map of these regions, you'll notice that there's a tremendous amount just past the Cascade Mountains that is desert. And most of Washington State is desert. But it is also in that desert that most of the grapes are grown, because they like a little struggle. They like the sort of conditions that it provides. And subsequently, Washington is America's second biggest producer of wine. That said, it doesn't produce even 10% of what California produces, but it is the second biggest. Long 17-hour summer days in winter, brutal Arctic winds, which can certainly freeze vines, but it's also really bad for phylloxera lice, I guess, technically. So you have a lot of vines that can be planted on their original rootstock as opposed to grafting. That's kind of cool, as long as you just, pray to the snow gods that they don't freeze your vines. So the weather from the Pacific is sort of cut off by those Cascades. It just kind of comes over, dumps immediately on the other side of it, and then the rest of the region is kind of left rain-free, which is, again, better for vines and not so good for most other things. What I kind of like, personally, just because I'm a German immigrant, third generation, is that the region itself was sort of settled by German and Italian immigrants in the 1870s and 1880s. Of course, Prohibition screwed them up just as much as everybody else, but I enjoy that it was sort of different than your traditional Spanish missionaries and stuff, which is basically everything you see down south. The more important thing about Washington, as opposed to Oregon, is that it's academia, the University of Washington specifically, is very involved in the wine trade up there. You've got an interesting pipeline, very similar to the UC Davis thing. By the way, UC Davis, University of California in Davis, was the country's first sort of major viticultural degree granting program. And so it's really interesting that Washington now is sort of embracing its, I don't want to say younger brother status, but in a way that is meant to kind of boost American viticulture in general, which is really cool. In terms of vine ownership, etc., one particular brand, Chateau Saint-Michel, which everybody knows, owns about two-thirds of all the vineyards there. The rest are independently owned and primarily, or you know, small family-owned, that some of them make their own wine, but most of them just sell off to other people. So it's kind of a very strange sort of monopoly, but fortunately, again, the Chateau Saint-Michel family, which is owned now by, I think they just got sold again. They were owned by Constellation Brands. But anyway, they're heavily invested, again, as I said, in the continuing education and propagation of North American viticultural knowledge. So that's really cool. So I'm sure I'm basically out of time. But as I said, next week I will talk about the East Coast. I'll try to get everything in, everything from, here in Maine, but certainly New York State, Virginia, heading on down the East Coast, because there are increasingly important places here now that we've sort of figured out the whole phylloxera thing. Now, and if we could figure out climate change, we'd just have it all figured out. That'll come with time. So, that's for next week. We'll head back east. And in the meantime, everybody take care of each other. And, be well.
By the way, solid Joey Lawrence impression.
Whoa! I'm always so embarrassed when they have, like, these Comic-Cons. And they're like, you're kind of geeky guy. Like, I take that as a compliment. You know all these people. I'm like, no, I don't. I don't know. There's levels to these things that I'm just like, I don't know. That said, I would have loved to have my picture taken with Joey Lawrence.
Well, yeah. And the beer looked good too.
The beer is good. See, that's the best part of it. You know, when you're on the periphery, you just get to enjoy the product. Speaking of which, everybody, buy the Bangor Comic-Con Blueberry Ale. It's delicious. And buy anything else you want at my store, because that's how we do.
There you go. Thanks, Eric. Have a good week. All right. We'll see you next Tuesday.
Thank you all. Be well. Bye-bye.
Eric Meehan.